Madam Clerk, please tally the board.
27 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Leading the invocation today is Pastor Larry Rorem of the Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church. Will everyone please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. God of love, understanding, justice, and equality, we gather here today as people who share great responsibility for the well-being of all people who call Alaska home. We live in and love a state of unequaled size and beauty. Help us who live in this place of such geographic, political, cultural, racial, and religious diversity to have a vision for our state that respects and deals with these differences with sensitivity and respect. We live in a world of so much inequality. Help us in our decision-making to not enhance the inequality, but rather find ways to dignify all of God's people. Help there to be respect for legitimate differences in decision-making. May our differences not divide us from what is best for the people of Alaska and our vision for unity. May the dilemma of equality challenge us to find creative, dignifying, and visionary ways to deal with the complexity of issues. Bless each member of this House of Representatives with the wisdom and compassion needed to make decisions that respect diversity, promote equality, and dignify all people. In your holy name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor Rorem. Representative Croft, would you lead us, please, in the pledge?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Ivan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I ask unanimous consent to spread the fine prayer across the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, may the record reflect that there are no representatives excused from a call of the House today.
That's good. Madam Clerk, would you please certify the journal for the previous legislative days?
I certify as the correctness of the journal for the 110th legislative day with the correction on page 1497 under engrossment for SJR 16. It should read CSSJR 16 Resources Amended House, and I further certify the correction of the journal for the 111th and 112th legislative days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journals, as corrected and certified by the Chief Clerk, be approved.
Without objection, the House journal stands approved. Do we have guests today for introduction? Representative Hudson.
Madam Speaker, up front and over on my port hand, your starboard, we have Nikki Hafner, who's assisting us today, Madam Speaker, as a guest page. Nikki is a 1996 graduate of JD High School, lived in Juneau for 9 years, and is currently a student at Rogue Community School. I believe that's in Oregon. And if everybody would please help us welcome her, she's helping us out today.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a starboarder, too, and a constituent, and someone that many on this floor know, particularly if you have ordered voter lists or walking lists. I think there's even now a verb. If you want some information in the election arena really analyzed, you have it Motznik's. And in any case, from the hillside in Anchorage, down here to discuss with some of you concerns about an attempt to deprivatize portions of the recorder's office is Bob Motznik. Would you please help me welcome him?
Further guests for introduction, Representative Elton.
Madam Speaker, for the first time, I'm going to poach on the representative from District 4's turf, but I feel comfortable doing it because I'd like to introduce an old friend, Laura Rorem, who is the other half of Minister Larry Rorem.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us down to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
Messages dated May 3rd from Pat Porchot, legislative director, stating that on May 2nd, the 20th, Alaska Legislature, acting in joint session, voted to override the veto of House Bill 65 amended and House CS for Senate Bill 24 finance amended House, and they have been forwarded to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. messages dated May 3rd stating that the governor has signed the following bills and they're transmitted to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. CS for House Bill 22, Judiciary. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 69 and House Bill 91. I have no further messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
Messages from the other body.
Message dated May 2nd stating the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 1. Finance amended, thus adopting House CS for Senate Bill 1, Judiciary. And a message dated May 2nd stating the Senate has passed the following for consideration. CS for Senate Bill 141, Rules amended by the Senate Rules Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Permits to Carry Concealed Handguns and Relating to the Possession of Firearms.
That'll be referred to the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the other body.
Communications.
Disclosures were received and will be published in the supplement. I have no further communication.
We're going to call a brief recess, a half-hour recess to the floor session at this time. Would the members please return to the chambers at 11:45? And with the leadership, please meet in my office.
Madam Speaker, I just announced that the minority to have a caucus done at this time.
Okay. Stand in recess for 1/2 hour. House come to order. Madam Clerk.
Standing committee reports. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Joint Resolution number 21, requesting Congress to amend ANILCA, recommending do pass VZ, do not pass Elton and Berkowitz. No recommendation, Hodgins. Amend, James and Dyson. The report was signed by James Chair. House Joint Resolution 21 has no further referral. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 38, Conveyance of Land Selections to Boroughs, recommending it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 38, Community and Regional Affairs, with the new title, attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Jewell and Dyson. No recommendation, Ryan and Ivan. The report was signed by Ivan Chair. House Bill 38 has a further referral to the World Trade Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 127, Foster Care Review Board, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 127, Finance, with the new title, attaches a fiscal note, recommending do pass Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davis, and Kelly. No recommendation, Davies and Moses. The report was signed by Mulder, Vice Chair. House Bill 127 has no further referral. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 269, Concealed Handgun Permits, attaches a fiscal note, recommending do pass James, Hodgins, Dyson, and Veazey. The report was signed by James Chair. House Bill 269 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Sponsor Substitute for Senate Bill 38, Judiciary, Atomical Gifts, Living Wills, and DNR Order, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Sponsor Substitute for Senate Bill 38, Judiciary, with the same title, recommending do pass Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davies, Kelly, and Davis. The report was signed by Mulder, Vice Chair. CSSS SB 38, Jude, has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 70, Judiciary, Discharge of Firearms at Buildings, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 70, Judiciary, with the same title, recommending do pass Green, Porter, no recommendation, Croft, and Berkowitz. The report was signed by Green Chair. CSSB 70, Jude, has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered Senate Bill 177, International Trade and Business Endowment, attaches a fiscal note, recommending do pass Martin and Davis. No recommendation, Mulder, Davies, Moses, and Kelly. Amend, Coring. The report was signed by Mulder, Vice Chair. Senate Bill 177 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Citations or resolutions for introduction?
Citation honoring Evelyn Monson by Representative Moses. Honoring the music machine Janet Carr Campbell and Darrell Schaff, directors, by Representative Martin. Honoring John Wolcott by Representative Barnes. Honoring Pete Hefner by Representative Barnes. Honoring Sam Pekovich by Representative Barnes. Honoring Tony McCormick by Representative Barnes. honoring Cheetah Readers Airport Heights Elementary School by Representative Ryan, recognizing Nobody Gets Hurt Week by Senator Lehman, honoring Chugiak High School Science Olympia Team 1997 State Champions by Senator Phillips and Halford Representative Dyson, Coring, and Cott, honoring Albert Van Ornum by Senator Phillips and Halford and Representative Dyson, in memoriam Marietta Williams by Representative Grusendorf, in memoriam William R. Bill Nix by Representatives Elton and Hudson and Senator Duncan. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Bills today for introduction?
House Bill 271 by Representative Veazey, entitled An Act Relating to Collective Bargaining Agreements for the Overtime Wage Requirement Exemption.
State Affairs and Judiciary?
I have no further bills for introduction, Madam Speaker.
This brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Clerk, please read the first item on today's calendar.
House Bill 109 by Representative Terrio, entitled An Act Relating to the Management and Disposal of State Land and Resources Relating to Certain Remote Parcel and Homestead Entry Land Purchase Contracts and Patents and Providing for an Effective Date. The Resources Committee considered the bill attached to fiscal note recommending do pass Dyson and Hudson. No recommendation Williams, Green, Masick, Ogun, Nope, and Nicolai and Jewell. The report was signed by Hudson and Ogun co-chairs. The Finance Committee considered the bill recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 109, Finance, with the same title, recommending do pass Terrio, Foster, Kelly, Davis, Moses, Davies, Martin, and Mulder. The report was signed by Terrio, co-chair. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for HB 109 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that CS for HB 109 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
CS for House Bill 109 Finance by the House Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Management and Disposal of State Land and Resources Relating to Certain Remote Parcel and Homestead Entry Land Purchase Contracts and Patents and Providing for an Effective Date.
Debate. Representative Terrio.
Madam Speaker, this major portions of this bill have been before us before. Last year I had a bill, HB 191, that contained this plus a couple of additional sections. We pulled out the sections dealing with mining, introduced those as a separate bill that have already gone through the House. We also pulled out the shore fisheries issue, which was rather contentious last year. Those are out of the bill. The three new sections that I would just like to point out to people. Section 24, let's see here, dealing with leasing of shorelands. We have right now a statute that says sets up a process for leasing of tidal lands. That did not cover, though, when that was put into place a couple years ago, did not cover riverbeds. And up in the interior of Alaska, we have a number of establishments, businesses along the river system, and they would like to use the same mechanism for leasing of property basically over the submerged riverbed. That is section 24 and 25. Then we also have language in here now dealing with the aquaculture situation. If the bill had passed last year, we would have preempted a court finding that has caused some problems with the current aquacultural leases. What we're setting up is a process for the permits to be saved and transferred over to leases. That is section 46 of the bill. The Department of Natural Resources supports the legislation. They supported it last year, and they support the current version. With that, I'll answer questions if members have them.
Debate? Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just want to make a minor correction in the Finance Committee notes on this bill. It goes through the whole deliberation that we had, and then it says that Representative Davies moved the bill out the usual way with accompanying fiscal note, but Madam Speaker, what I actually said with the accompanying glowing fiscal note.
Which accompanying what?
Glowing. It was a wonderful fiscal note, Madam Speaker.
Okay. Thank you. If members will correct their Finance Committee records. Further debate? Representative Ivan?
May I call for an ideas, please?
House stand at ease. Further debate? Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 109? All members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Bill 109 passes the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on CS for HB 109 Finance be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 207 by Representatives Green and Roachberg, entitled An Act Relating to Employer Drug and Alcohol Testing Programs. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 207, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Ryan and Roachberg. No recommendation, Hudson, Rice, and Caldery. Amend, Cabina. The report was signed by Roachberg Chair. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 207, Judiciary, with the same title, recommending due pass Roachberg, Porter, Green. No recommendation, Croft, James, Berkowitz, and Bundy. The report was signed by Green Chair. I have two committee substitutes on my desk.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for HB 207 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that CS for HB 207 Judiciary be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection. Clerk, please read the title for the third and final time.
CS for House Bill 207 Judiciary by the House Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Employer Drug and Alcohol Testing Programs.
Debate. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'll talk briefly on the merits of the bill. With some 53,000 Alaskans being tested annually for drug or alcohol impairment on the job place, that there is no state policy for what constitutes too much or is there impairment. So what this bill does, Madam Speaker, is not mandate that an employer would institute such a program, but if they choose to voluntarily, this would provide some immunity from that for that company from an employee who was found to test positive for either drug or alcohol. There would be a certain number of restrictions that the employer must take. He must make sure that the sample is taken respecting the right of privacy, that there is a trail, that the sample cannot be distorted or lost en route, that all of those policies, according to the federal government policy, would federal guidelines would be taken, and that if everything is in good taste, in good faith, and not abused, there would be the immunity. Now, there are several cases that are several causes of action, Madam Speaker, that should the employer try and use this in an improper way, that still does not remove the tort possibility from the employee. I'm sorry. That the employer must designate from either from outside or from his own employment a person trained in determining whether the actions of a person are justified for requiring a drug test. The program must delineate those job specifications because of a safety issue that would be subject to indiscriminate or at least arbitrary tests having been determined by this specialist. There is a limit set for each drug according to the federal guidelines. There is confidentiality required, and that there must be, if a test is positive, Madam Speaker, a confirming test before any action can be taken, and this would be the very expensive but extremely accurate gas chromatograph test, so that there is actually two positive tests. There is still a requirement in the bill then that there would be discretion used by the employer to determine whether or not this employee happened to be on some prescribed drug that would show positive.
certainly that would be then entered as a negative test if he is actually doing what his physician, licensed physician, is instructed him to do. So, Madam Speaker, this is all by way of saying that this does offer guidelines for assuring that there isn't abuse taken between employer and employee. It is strictly a voluntary test program that must be completely documented before, must be 30 days prior, so there, if there is an employee that might be abusing some drug at the time the employer selects this program voluntarily, he could purge his system. And, Madam Speaker, I want to add one thing, that there has been some mail submitted to some of the members of this committee from a maker of a test kit indicating that by passing this bill, it would outlaw the use of that test. That's absolutely not true. The employer still has any voluntary test he wants to make. This does no way cause any restriction of whatever the policy might be. Some companies actually have higher policies in the medicine than the minimums described in this program, Madam Speaker, but it does by only the voluntary rather than the required test.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? I'll stand at ease. Back to order. I'll stand momentarily at ease. House, come back to order. Under debate, Representative Croft.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I wasn't going to rise on this. I'd like to thank the sponsor for working with some of the affected employee groups to make this bill better. And my problem with it is a theoretical one. We've moved from a situation where we were wondering whether this intrusive test, forcing someone to pee in a bottle and then have that tested, was even allowed under the general American ideals of privacy or the Alaska privacy provision. I don't know whether that specifically been litigated or not. I know there's been some discussion on it. But we're now three steps down the line. Whether you test employees in particularly sensitive industries for alcohol or drug testing, whether you test all employees, and now to the point where you test an employee, you come out and say, Joe Green's on heroin, oops, I'm sorry, that wasn't correct, whether you can be immunized for that. To me, we've gone too far. We've gone from a legitimate concern about certain sensitive industries to, I guess, if the sponsor's correct, I have no reason to believe he isn't, 53,000 working Alaskans being tested. We've only got 600,000 odd people in this, one out of eight Alaskan in this state, one out of eight Alaskans being tested. I assume the workforce is somewhat smaller than the total population. We've got somewhere more than an eighth of all of us getting these intrusive tests done regularly at the workplace. And now we're going to say, when we're wrong, right? It's enough to have it done. It's enough to have it be required in your workplace. But then to say, oops, we made a false statement about you, about something as serious as your use of illegal drugs or overuse of alcohol, and we were wrong. But there's no cause of action now against the company. Again, I commend the sponsor for putting some safeguards in the bill, but I don't know why we're immunizing that sort of result. It seems to me we're codifying, encouraging even, this invasive test in areas where it may or may not be appropriate. And it's the sponsor said a number of times that this is voluntary, and that's absolutely correct. What he meant, though, is that it's a voluntary program the employer may choose. It's not voluntary for the employees. It's not something that people choose to have done. So The voluntary aspects is companies may or may not decide to adopt these guidelines, and if they do, whatever they and if they do, and within certain parameters, whatever they say about their employees' test results is immunized. I think at some level we do impinge the privacy rights of our working Alaskans, 53,000 apparently, and I think this is the point where we do. So I plan to vote against the bill.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm concerned about another aspect of this too. This voluntary program, when an employer voluntarily adopts this, and I guess one question would be, how faithfully does an employer have to adopt this? I mean, do they have to adopt every single paragraph here? And if they don't, then they don't qualify under these exemptions. It seems like a lot of little litigation loopholes in here to me. But my biggest concern is on page 1, line 11, where we're immunizing them. A person may not bring an action for damage against employer for a failure to testing. Now, Madam Speaker, I guess I wonder about an employer who might be a private employer running a bus company, say, and they have not tested their employees for some kind of drug or alcohol, and that one of their employees is seriously impaired by some drug or alcohol and kills somebody. If the employer had this kind of a drug testing program in place satisfactorily, you could not bring a action against them and claim that they were negligent for not having a testing program that tested for that substance. When, for example, if they didn't test for alcohol, and we know that 80% of fatal accidents, I'm picking a number here, but it is a high number, but some large percentage of accidents are caused by or involve alcohol. Why wouldn't we want to be able to have a cause of action against that employer for failing to test for a drug that was known to be a problem in that industry or in that circumstance? It seems to me that this immunization here is ill-advised. Thank you.
Further debate? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would only rise to addressed in part concerning the last speaker. I would believe that if an employer had knowledge that they had a person with a problem in the use of alcohol, for example, and did not take some kind of positive action, that a case most certainly could be brought, sustained obviously based on the facts, but could be brought for negligent retention, which is another area of employment law that would be used, I would guess, to supersede even this, if it were allowed, that they could for the failure to test. So it certainly doesn't bar recovery for that kind of action just because this does or does not allow a suit for specifically for failure to test.
Further debate? Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. My concern here has to do with privacy and immunization. The first is we're allowing employers to take tests without suspicions particular to the individuals being tested. And that's a step away from the rigid privacy protections that are normally accorded Alaskans. My second concern is we then go about immunizing the employers. Well, I'd like to ask members here to consider who would want to take one of these tests. Does anyone here want to do that? Well, then I would encourage those people to go do it and go have it tested. But I, for one, don't want to take one of those tests, would feel my privacy were affected if someone forced me to do so. I have a particular concern with one section of the bill, which relates to, on page 6, sample collection, storage, and transportation. And it states, if I may read, Madam Speaker, it shall be transportation to the place of testing shall be performed in a manner reasonably designed to preclude the possibility of sample contamination, adulteration, or misidentification. Madam Speaker, I've done some work with this kind of testing, and gas chromatography is indeed a fairly accurate way of testing. But there's problems here with maintaining reliable chain of custody, and there's problems here with maintaining reliable collection, storage, and transportation. We don't know after someone takes one of these tests out in the field if the sample has been properly labeled, properly stored at the correct temperature. We don't know because there are no requirements in this bill. And assuming, Madam Speaker, that an error is made, a false positive results from contamination, from adulteration, there's no way for the employee who's been falsely labeled to get recourse. That's not fair. That's saying that we're going to give the employer immunization without holding the employer to standards where that immunization is suitable. Madam Speaker, I understand why people want immunity. It certainly helps predictability, but I don't think it promotes responsibility. Thank you.
Any further debate before we go to wrap up? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Excuse me, addressing the prior speaker's comments first. If he goes down a few more lines, it says that in this bill, that drug testing shall be conducted at a laboratory approved or certified by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration or the College of American Pathologists, American Association of Clinical Chemists, for the very reasons that the prior speaker indicated, there might be contamination in the field or some other method. Now, that still does not preclude companies who do that regularly now from continuing to do what they're doing now. It just says that if I, as a company, want to establish this for some immunity, I will have to follow the outlines in the bill, and one of those is that I will pay for this employee to go to a certified lab to have the sample taken. The sample then will be numbered. It won't be with his name on it for all to see, and this gets back into some earlier comments that were made that this is an invasion of privacy in that everybody will know. That's not so. Even the testing persons won't know. They'll only know that number 14, or whatever number it was, tested positive, and that sample then will be tested again to be sure, because there is some degree of uncertainty in chemical tests. But when the prior speaker indicated that the gas chromatograph is pretty accurate, I believe that was a very conservative statement. It is extremely accurate because it gets to the molecular structure of the substance being tested for. So I think that's the purpose behind it. It's only going to be those second tests for positive abuse that will be determined. As far as the fact that we now, with this kind of a bill, that this would afford some sort of unreasonable opening up to knowing everybody, everybody in the company would know who was tested. That's not true. And if the members would look on page 2, you cannot bring an action unless, and there are four items there that are extremely conforming, that say that if you're going to have this policy, it has to include this provision, and that if you disclose it to the wrong person, are negligent with your findings, put this out for public knowledge, yes, you've waived your right of immunity and there can be an action brought. And so, Madam Speaker, I think the safeguards are taken in this bill, and I want to stress again that don't confuse this bill with the options that are still being used of the 53,000 or so. Maybe half, maybe less, will take advantage of this possibility. The rest may, in fact, we know from some companies now, they test at a higher bar than the federal guidelines. They do this on their own voluntarily. So it will not have any effect on those companies.
Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Representative Veazey?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I would just like to say that I have been associated with testing under the Drug-Free Workplace Act for a number of years. And I am not aware of anywhere in the industry where there has been a problem with a negative test, or I'm sorry, a false positive test, rather. I am aware of numerous cases where there have been false positives, numerous cases where there have been mistakes. Everyone has worked on this, and every one of these cases that I'm aware of had been resolved to the satisfaction of all parties. There is even a third tier of tests that is available to any person who thinks that they have been aggrieved, and that is that they can request a FTA or fatty tissue analysis, which retains traces of illegal drugs far longer than does urine. So, Madam Speaker, while there are some concerns here, the fact of the matter is that all employers have an obligation to abide by the Drug-Free Workplace Act, and this bill, in my opinion, is an attempt to recognize that we're not going to hold them to a civil or criminal liability standard for attempting to comply with the law.
Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 207? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
35 yeas, 5 nays.
And so House Bill 207 passes the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. Representative Berkowitz.
I'd like to give notice of reconsideration on my vote on House Bill 207.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on 207. Representative Veazey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the reconsideration on House Bill 207 be taken up on the same day.
Here is objection. The question before the body is taking up reconsideration of House Bill 207 on the same day. Is there debate? I'll stand at ease. Representative Berkowitz?
I withdraw my notice of reconsideration.
Notice of reconsideration has been withdrawn. Clerk, please, Representative Veazey?
I withdraw my motion, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 210 by Representative Roekberg, entitled An Act Relating to the Extension of Contracts for the Sale and Delivery of inbound merchandise at international airports. The Transportation Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass. Kukesh, Sanders, Calderi, and Williams. No recommendation, Elton and Masick. The report was signed by Williams. A zero fiscal note was attached. The Labor and Commerce Committee was waived. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that HB 210 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
House Bill 210 by Representative Roekberg, entitled An Act Relating to the Extension of Contracts for the Sale and Delivery of Inbound Merchandise at International Airports.
Debate? Representative Roekberg?
Madam Speaker, this is a simple bill that merely provides another tool to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to enable them to enter into negotiations for an extension of a lease for the duty-free concessionaires in the state in order for them to be more competitive in the marketplace. Madam Speaker, with the opening of Soviet airspace and other considerations of and development of long-haul aviation jets, the revenues at the Anchorage International Airport went from a peak of $100 million gross receipts with as much as $19 million going to the state of Alaska to a low of $7 million. There has been, and then, Madam Speaker, there was competitive bidding three times before any viable businesses came forward to make an offer. I'm pleased to report, Madam Speaker, that there is a group of Alaskans that now hold that concession at the airport. However, to make their business more competitive, because they're competing with duty-free shops in the Orient and at the destinations, for example, New York City, Chicago, and so forth, that they need to be able to extend their leasehold so they can make a investment in the premises so they can invite major cachet merchandisers to come into their facility and display and have an increased inventory for sales of these people. So that's, Madam Speaker, what this bill is all about. It's about increasing the revenues to the state of Alaska and fostering an Alaskan-owned business and their success. And I would like the consideration of the body and a yes vote on this measure. Thank you.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Oh, Representative Rusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm delighted that the representative from District 11 has given me a chance to see Ogden Nash's Purple Cow. And I am delighted because I support it. Now, it's kind of interesting when you look at it. It says, in the best interest of the state, and it's talking about the airport itself. And what we're doing is we're backing away from a very competitive world for the best interest of what is happening at the airport. In other words, if you lower the cost and you're competitive, because the whole thing is the competition that exists in the other international airports. And in looking at it, I say, well, why do I like it? Well, you know, Madam Speaker, there's a dam resolution further down on the calendar that is an anti-purple cow piece of legislation. Thank you.
No, he was not. If you had read your calendar, you would have seen. Further debate. Are you ready for the question? Question, shall the House adopt House Bill 210? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
39 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Bill 210 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think I have one either. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 256 by Representative Davis, entitled An Act Relating to Regulation of Postsecondary Educational Institutions and Providing for an Effective Date. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill, attached a fiscal note recommending due pass Dyson, Green, Bundy, and Porter. No recommendation, Kimplin. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. I have an amendment on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Clerk, please read the first amendment.
Amendment number one by Representative Davis and Cott, beginning page one, line one.
Representative Davis?
Move amendment number one, Madam Speaker.
There is objection. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Amendment number one addresses an issue that came up in a bill a couple of years ago. I believe it was even last year, I believe, that we passed a post-secondary ed bill relating to recouping some of the costs associated with the student loan program. This amendment simply clarifies what is a bit of a general statement in the Act. It addresses on the default, how the default rate and when the default rate shall be determined. The current law simply says annually. This specifically, the change in the amendment changes it to, instead of that general annually statement, to reflect the school year of each institution.
Is the objection maintained? Objection is not maintained. Amendment number one is adopted. Does the clerk have further amendments?
No. Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that HB 256 be considered engrossed and advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
House Bill 256, amended by Representative Davis, entitled An Act Relating to Calculation of the Default Rate for Purposes of the Student Loan Program and to Regulation of Post-Secondary Educational Institutions and Providing for an Effective Date.
Debate. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just briefly, I believe all of us in this body and in the state want us to authorize and have some oversight on the post-secondary education institutions in the state. We have a staff that does that. It's a very minimal staff. Their costs are right around $100,000 a year. We are currently, the fees charged for that service are currently generating right around $2,000 a year. That's quite an inequity. And what this bill does is allows the department, in conjunction with the institutions, to establish a fee that will increase the fees
provide that service. It won't completely pay for it, but it will go a long way in providing a proper fee structure.
House stand at ease. House come to order. Further debate? Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. There are some concerns that I have with this bill. It's not that I oppose it by any means. I think it's very important that the state recoup some of the costs that recoup some of the expenditures that we lay out to ensure that the post-secondary schools that receive student loans or for that matter, that are even accredited in the state do the job they're supposed to do. My big concern is that some of the fee structures that are being discussed would increase current fees from $100 per accreditation period up to potentially $2,500 per cycle. Madam Speaker, in some institutions or in some situations, in some programs, that can be a very hard hit to the school that is providing post-secondary education. And we're talking about programs, barbers and hairdressers programs, truck driving programs, whatever, that type of stuff. So having discussed the issue with the Department of, post-secondary commission, I'm hopeful, Madam Speaker, that they will institute their fee structure in a way that will not put a too great of a financial burden on many of these small schools that are helping to provide programs that get people into work, get them to be employable, basically. With that, Madam Speaker, I would just encourage folks that once this bill is passed, that keep in mind that during the regulatory process, we need to keep an eye on the Post-Secondary Education Commission, make sure that the fee structures aren't implemented in a way that's going to be detrimental to a vocational program.
Further debate?
Are you ready for the question?
Question being, shall the House adopt House Bill 256? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
38 yeas, 1 nay.
And so House Bill 256 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on HB 256 be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Representative Bryce.
Madam Speaker, can we revert to introduction of guest right quick?
Without objection, right click.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery, I have a constituent and friend down from Fairbanks. It's would the body please help me welcome Cynthia Henry, who is the president of the school board in Fairbanks.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back down the calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill 124 by Senator Torgerson, entitled An Act Relating to Salmon Classics and Race Classics. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass James Hodgins, Dyson, Veazey, and Ivan. No recommendation, Elton and Berkowitz. The report was signed by James Chair. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that SB 124 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
Senate Bill 124 by Senator Torgerson, entitled An Act Relating to Salmon Classics and Race Classics.
Debate? Ready for the question?
Yes.
Question being, shall the House adopt Senate Bill 124? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Davies? Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please lock the roll and tally the board.
29 yeas, 10 nays.
And so Senate Bill 124 passes the House. House stand at ease. House come back to order. It is our intent right now to recess until 5 p.m. Come back at 5 p.m. So the House stand in recess until 5. The members, please indicate their presence in order to establish a quorum. Madam Clerk, would you please wait 1 second? Would you please lock the roll and announce quorum?
26 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 266 by Representatives Ryan, Terrio, and Vesey, entitled An Act Relating to Limited Liability Companies and Limited Partnerships and Providing for an Effective Date, we're in third reading.
Debate? Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill is a cleanup of the legislation that was passed a couple years ago. The IRS had made four criteria for you to be taxed as a partnership or a limited liability company, which meant a single taxation. If you met two of the or more of these criteria, then they taxed you as a corporation, which meant you got taxed twice. You got taxed on the profits of the business plus individual taxation on the disbursements of the profits. January 1st of this year, the IRS rescinded this huge bunch of onerous regulations, and so now they have a very simple form, check the box, and then you're taxed as a partnership individually or individually for your liability in a limited liability company. What this piece of legislation does is repeals the portions of the IRS code that was in the previous legislation. It will clean this up. It will allow our Department of Banking and Corporations to set up an internet program where people can form limited liability and limited partnerships 7 days a week, 24 hours a day with a credit card from all over the world. I'll ask if we get 5,000 of these formed, it will be an extra $1 million for commerce and economic development. We'll be on the cutting edge. All the other state legislatures have adjourned. They will not have an opportunity this year to take advantage of this. Alaska will be the first one in the door. And being the first one, the word will get around, and we stand to do substantial business. It's perhaps a new idea. It's not something that has been rehashed many times, and a lot of people I know I've received a lot of questions about this because folks say, what are you doing? Well, what's new? I must be up to something because I'm coming up with something that no one's heard of. But basically what I'm trying to do is allow more business opportunities for Alaska, more revenue for the state, and enhance the business climate of Alaska and perhaps bring more money up here. And I ask everyone's support on this bill, and I assure you that being a public figure, I'm not up to anything.
Further debate? Representative Berkowitz?
Very briefly, Madam Speaker. I don't believe that the former speaker is up to anything, but I haven't had, I believe, nor has the public had, adequate opportunity to review this bill, which makes some rather sweeping changes to Alaska's laws related to limited liability companies. And I think the inability to track this bill through the normal committee process is what lessens my confidence in the contents of the bill. My preliminary review indicates that it does what the former speaker says. But the public hasn't had a chance to weigh in, and I have found particularly in bills that create sweeping changes to how we treat corporations, how we treat liability issues. The more the public is involved, the more they feel a part of the process, the better the product we produce. And my complaint isn't so much with the bill, but the inadequacy of the process of this particular bill.
House Deputies, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I find the previous speaker's comments a little bit confusing. The bill is a House bill that, in addition to the opportunities for public process and input,
and this body will go to the other body for the same opportunities. But as a matter of fact, I see that it was referred initially to Labor and Commerce. I'm not on that committee, and I don't know whether the previous speaker is or not. But it was heard in Judiciary. I am a member of that committee, as is the previous speaker. And it certainly had a full hearing and an opportunity for the public to weigh in. It is going through a third hearing right now, and will go through the same process in the other body. I think that this is the same exposure that the limited liability partnership legislation, which was certainly more complex than this, got when we passed it a couple of years ago, and has only been required to be changed because of an IRS change, and otherwise it happens to be functioning very well within the state. I do not consider that there has been an inadequate opportunity for the public to hear, become acquainted with, and become very comfortable with this bill already, although it will have that same opportunity in the other body.
House stand at ease. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May I first request permission to move down the calendar to unfinished business?
Without objection.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May I ask move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Martin be excused from a call to the House tonight beginning at 6:30 p.m. as an engagement that is imperative.
Without objection. Representative Martin will be excused. House stand at ease. Back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Back to the discussion of HB 266, I want to correct the record. I have had more time on my hands in the last week or two than I have had previously this session, and I've actually been able to study the bills that are coming before Judiciary. And I studied that one, and to the extent, I guess, that I assumed that I heard it. But we did, of course, pass the bill that enabled limited liability partnerships previous year or two, and that's when I was chairman. Anyway, we didn't hear the darn bill in Judiciary, and I stand corrected. It was heard in Labor and Commerce. It is, as I have previously said, and the sponsor has said, primarily a move to incorporate changes in the IRS code. And with that in mind, I think it has had one hearing. It, in the normal process of public involvement, will receive another, and I would still believe that the process has been sufficient.
The information in the body, that's good argument or good discussion on the public process on the bill. Any further discussion on that will be out of order. The debate now is on the bill itself. Representative Davies.
Speaker, may I have permission to read one sentence from the committee notes?
As long as it deals with the bill itself, you can read whatever you'd like.
Well, there was a Mr. Weaver from the Alaska Bankers Association, and he was asked if he had an opinion on the bill, on the content of the bill. And Mr. Weaver indicated that he didn't have one at this time because he'd only had an hour to review it.
Further debate on the bill? Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt?
Madam Speaker.
Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I guess I just have a question here for the carrier, the sponsor of this bill, because in his presentation, he mentioned that this was just a cleanup to address IRS. And it seems that there are some changes in here that do not appear to me on the surface to be connected with IRS. And, in particular, page 4, line 21, where it changes not reasonably practicable to impossible. And I'm just wondering, was that part of the IRS change, or is that something that is occurring as a sidebar to that?
Further debate? Representative Veazey?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would answer the previous speaker's question by saying that, yes, those are all, and all, I believe it's 20 sections of the bill, are in response to changes that the IRS made. You have to remember the IRS first started promulgating regulations regarding limited liability companies and partnerships over 40 years ago. They have never codified a single set of regulations. These forms of businesses have been in limbo for many, many years. The IRS finally sat down and codified a set of regulations, released that information in January, and all the changes in the bill are in there so that it is clear that what meets the IRS standards meets Alaska standards.
Ready for the question? Representative Davies?
Mr. Speaker, the sponsor of the bill indicated that with this new business going on in the state that there would be more money coming into the state. I read that state coffers, that is state of Alaska coffers. Can you tell me if that's true, and if so, how?
Further debate? Representative Ryan?
Yes, Madam Speaker. These companies, limited liability companies and limited partnerships, usually the complexity of putting them together under the old system, the fees usually went from about $12,500 to $25,000 for the attorney who did the work, because as you see in the beginning, there's an agreement, an operating agreement, that tells how the company will run. If there is no operating agreement, all the statutes are the minimum requirements that have to be maintained previous to the time of or previous without the operating agreement. So we have the operating agreement rules all. If there is no operating agreement, then you have to follow the minimum statutes. Now, since you can check the box, we have been in contact with Mr. Kirkpatrick, who runs the banking and securities, and they are talking about and in the process of setting up an internet program with the forms. And the person who wants to set this up will type the necessary information into the computer with a credit card number and whip it off to the state of Alaska. And Mr. Kirkpatrick said, I usually take the paperwork and copy it in the computer, then we throw it away. Now it's all here. We download it. We download the credit card numbers. And the ease and the availability of use, especially with the check the box, is such that it's not going to cost $12,000 or $25,000 to do this anymore. There will be attorneys who will be doing the operating agreements, but setting up the basic structure of the company will be a $250 to $300 fee for the state of Alaska. If you figure first one in the door, 5,000 fees, that's $1 million for the state in fees for the collection of the registration fees for these. If being the first one in the door and the word gets around the world, they do this in the Caribbean quite a bit. They have many jurisdictions where they have very ease of setting up limited liability companies, setting up limited partnerships, international business corporations, trusts, and so forth. They operate the same way, and they do a fairly well business. There's estimated to be $5 trillion offshore in various forms of companies and holdings and securities and so forth. I have been, in conjunction with Representative Veazey, trying to do is get some of that money back onshore.
Representative Ryan.
And ease and convenience makes it happen.
Representative Ryan, you must refer to members of the body as the representative.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative District 32. Sorry about that. Anyway, we are trying to bring these opportunities to the state of Alaska to get more capital investment, to get a share of the pie, and perhaps a large share, because we have the opportunity of having the American banking system and the United States government behind these. And that is a security no small island republic in the Caribbean or South America can offer. And this is where I think the value will come and where the interest will be. And, yes, there we anticipate a minimum of $1 million more for banking and security.
Further debate? House stand at ease. House come back to order. Representative Martin, you're holding up the show. House come back to order. Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt House Bill 266? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Open the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
37 yeas, 1 nay.
And so House Bill 266 passes the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on HB 266 be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 16 by Representative Barnes proposing recommendations concerning the sale of the Four Dam Pool hydroelectric facilities. The Finance Committee considered the resolution, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 16 Finance with the same title, attaches a fiscal note recommending do pass Terrio, Hanley, Foster, Mulder, Martin, do not pass Kelly, no recommendation Moses and Davis, amend Grusendorf. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee, that the Finance Committee substitute for HCR 16 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does clerk have amendments on her desk?
Amendment number 1 by Representative Grusendorf to page 2, line 13.
We're going to stand briefly at ease before we take the First Amendment. We're on Amendment Number 1 of House Concurrent Resolution Number 16. Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move Amendment Number 1.
There is objection. Representative Grusendorf.
Hearing objections, I want some of you in this body to relax, not rough up your fur or arch your back, and listen very carefully at what the amendment does. You know, Madam Speaker, we have an organization that we have used over the years, and it's called ADA. And they basically have been very responsible with their investments. In fact, if I look at the capital budget that we're building today, and in some cases, basically the capital budget, you'll see that we are using, in many cases, ADA funds. So they have been responsible enough where money is coming back in for our budgetary process. And these people that are on the board of ADA are definitely good stewards of the investments that the state of Alaska has encouraged them to make with various individuals, basically corporations, and in this case, municipalities. But as the current resolution reads, it basically denies ADA and the board to consider any other alternates that may exist. Now, earlier, and I know I'm kind of pushing it, Madam Speaker, with the purple cow, but we did have a similar situation with contracts to be extended, which was agreeable to us. But now we have a situation where there presently is contracts in place. And what this would do is basically allow ADA to make a good decision in the best interest of the state. Now, Madam Speaker, may I refer you to a letter that was sent to you back on March 21st, 1997. May I read just a few lines?
Not a problem.
And this is the ending of it. And the signator, of course, is Randy Simmons, who is the executive director. He says, if we are unable to make substantial progress with the utilities by July 31st, 1997, that could lead to a transfer, AEA intends to consider other alternatives for the projects. In any event, AEA intends to submit a plan for the projects to the legislators next session. Now, what the amendment does is it gives a little bit more flexibility to those that manage our assets. But when you say you shall promptly prepare and, you know, put a request for proposal, that may mean a lot of energy is spent on the part of ADA, Alaska Energy Authority, and not giving them the time to sit and check the backgrounds of the investors. There is a proposal that is floating around now, but believe me, there are many questions to be answered on it, and I wouldn't want to have a situation occurring where we have had much faith in ADA with our investments, and I think we should continue that and allow them to present to us what they think is the best option. There are several different alternatives, and I think we should allow them to make that recommendation to us. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Up in the Finance Committee, we did consider an amendment. I'm not sure it was worded exactly the same, but somewhat along this line. And the decision was that if we don't deal with this issue, it's just going to be back before us. And what we decided that we wanted to do is direct ADA to go out with an RFP. And there may be no proposals that are made that are acceptable. And then we will go forward knowing that they tried to negotiate something with the current utilities. When that didn't pan out, because we're giving them time to put that proposal together, and if it doesn't pan out, then they could go out to a competitive RFP. At that time, the utilities can still participate in that competitive RFP program. But if, having gone through that step, we still don't receive anything that ADA determines is good enough to bring back to the legislature, then we'll be pretty much done with the issue. We won't still be wondering, whether ADA withheld going out to an RFP, and if they had done that in the private sector, there would have been a good proposal. So I think it's something that we need to see all the way through the existing negotiations with the utilities, and also if that does not bear fruit, then go out to the private sector, give the private sector a chance. Then we will know next year whether the utilities or the private sector is able to come up with a proposal that's acceptable. If we put in this language that says is authorized to pursue any alternative that is in the state's best interest, well, who's going to make that determination? ADA. So they may decide not to go ahead with the RFP. That, I think, would fall short of really answering the question for us of whether the utilities or the private sector can put together a proposal we would find acceptable.
Further debate on amendment number one? You ready for the question? Representative Ryan?
Madam Speaker, I put a call on the House, please.
There is a call placed on the House. Representative Grusendorf?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As indicated by the letter that was addressed to you, the ADA Board and Alaska Energy Authority, which is under ADA, intends to submit to us a plan. Now, the plan could include, putting this out for an RSP, or it could include something else that we could evaluate that perhaps is more beneficial to the state and perhaps even those residents that are presently receiving that power. Right now, under the current arrangement, there is roughly $11 million that flows into the state for distribution. The self-help provision has caused some questions on that, but that is because of the fault of the state and our commitments in relation to those communities. So I'm saying there are ways to approach this, and these people, ADA, have run good portfolios and good projects for us. Let them do it, but they still will submit to us a plan.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the amendment, as I see it, to this resolution does considerable harm, inasmuch as that I think it would allow political pressure to be brought on ADA to make a decision that they need not make if this is done through the RFP process. Madam Speaker, all of ADA's decisions have not been wonderful, as the previous speaker leads us to believe. We all know that there were some projects that simply did not pan out due to political pressure. And I don't want to see this political pressure brought on ADA, and I do believe that if this amendment were to pass, that at the time that the utilities did not come forward with a fair market value proposal, that in fact ADA then would not go out for an RFP, So I think it is not a good amendment, and it is not in the best interest of the state.
Representative Croft?
I've been hearing about this damn proposal for a long time. And to tell you the truth, when it first started, I didn't know a damn thing. The
Representative Croft, that one was out of line. The first one was acceptable.
You're quite right then. And I'd just like to say I like the amendment because it allows us not just to have one damn proposal, but to have the best damn proposal we can get.
I'd say that was skating. Further debate? Representative Williams.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I look at this amendment number one as giving ADA enough leeway to manage the sale of the dam proposal. I support this. I think that we should not be trying to micromanage ADA. I believe that if ADA is doing considerable harm to the state of Alaska, and I think we should look at ADA and seeing how we should change ADA. And thank you, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to state for the record and for the clerk that during the discussion of this amendment and all of the bill, that DAM is spelled D-A-M.
Representative Ryan.
Madam Speaker, I remove the call.
Call's been lifted. Further debate? Representative Roachberg.
Madam Speaker, in talking about the effectiveness of the ADA organization, I just remind the body that they have a few hangars for sale, and at a point in time there was a lot of office buildings in the Anchorage area that they brought to the market that ran a lot of private sector businessmen out of business. So I don't think we should have entire faith in a organization that I think reformed itself and is doing a remarkably good job now. However, I don't believe we should abrogate the responsibility of the legislature to a organization which would make this decision.
Representative Davies.
Well, Madam Speaker, I don't think that anything in this amendment suggests abrogating our responsibility. What is suggested is that ADA has indicated in testimony in front of a couple of committees that they intend to bring a proposal back to this legislature next January. So I don't think that there's any abrogation at all. I mean, the ADA board and the director clearly intend to try to examine what they believe is to be in the best interest of the state and then to bring that forward for us to ratify that decision. If we disagree, we can disagree. Madam Speaker, I think that with the resolution to force the decision into one of the potential plans is also a form of political pressure, and that there's a certain amount of politics involved in whether we support this resolution or not. Madam Speaker, I think that the ADA board has been on a reasonable path. They've examined a number of reasonable alternatives, and they're in the course of examining one of those right now. They indicate that they have set themselves a deadline of July 31, and furthermore that they have a deadline of bringing some kind of a plan, either if they successfully complete the negotiations on the present negotiations, probably that plan, or some alternative plan to the legislature by next January. Madam Speaker, I think that it's quite a rational and reasonable process is going on right now, and I support the amendment.
Further debate? Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. I know this is unusual, but I must defend ADA because several projects were mentioned here that they were found fault with, and many of you that has been around know that we forced ADA, literally beat them on the head to do the hangars and some of the other projects. They didn't want to do it, but when you start taking good, sound fiscal policies and applying the politics the other way, that's exactly what you get, and that's exactly what's happening here.
Further debate? Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment number one. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
23 yeas, 16 nays.
And so amendment number one passes the House. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number two by Representative Grusendorf to page 2, lines 21 and 22.
Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. With the passage of amendment number one, I will not be offering amendment number two.
Amendment number two is withdrawn. Representative Veazey, House stand at ease. We're going to stand in recess for 5 minutes for a majority caucus. Madam Clerk, you have further amendments on your desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
House Concurrent Resolution 16 will be held in second reading for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Madam Speaker.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Just a brief thing.
House stand at ease. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Joint Resolution number 25 by Senators Wilkins, Sharp, Miller, Taylor, Pierce, supporting enhancement of visitor access to Denali National Park and Preserve through development of a Northern Railroad Route Corridor access to the vicinity of Wonder Lake. The Transportation Committee considered the resolution recommending due pass Elton, Kukish, Sanders, Massick, and Williams. The report was signed by Williams Chair. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that SJR 25 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
Senate Joint Resolution 25, supporting enhancement of visitor access to Denali National Park and Preserve through development of a Northern Railroad Route Corridor access to the vicinity of Wonder Lake.
Debate? Representative Davies?
Seems like deja vu all over again.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Senate Joint Resolution number 25? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please void the roll. All members, please realize we're trying to take a vote. Question before the body. Shall the House pass or adopt Senate Joint Resolution number 25? All members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Berkowitz? Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please lock the roll and tally the board.
39 yeas, 0 nays.
And so Senate Joint Resolution number 25 passes the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
There's citations on today's calendar.
The Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Under unfinished business, I will add a finance referral to Senate Bill 60. It's the advisory vote on capital punishment, and it has a fiscal note. Further unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. First, I would move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Kelly be excused from a call to the House 5-7 Wednesday, 6:25 a.m. Plain Time, till 9:33 a.m. Plain Time, May 8, Thursday.
Without objection, Representative Kelly will be excused from a call of the House on that day.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Continuing under unfinished business, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the members of the House go into the limbo file in order to consider HB 114.
Without objection, we're in the limbo file.
Madam Speaker, Representative from District 18 will explain the Senate amendments.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Senate Finance Committee amended the bill to make it clear that the Department of Health and Social Services has access to patient records only for diseases and conditions of public health significance. The bill does not grant the department unlimited access to patient records and data. With this amendment, the bill is supported by the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association and the American Cancer Society.
To CS for SBHB 114, rules be move that the House concur with the Senate amendment to HB 114, thus adopting this bill, and recommend that the members vote yes.
Debate. The motion before the body is to concur in the Senate changes in Senate Bill and House Bill 114. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Clerk, please open the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
36 yeas, 3 nays.
And so the House has concurred in the Senate CS to House Bill 114. House briefly stand at ease, Representative Green. Order. Further unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Hey, Madam Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the members of the House go into limbo file in order we may consider HB 214.
Without objection, we are in the limbo file.
Hey, Madam Speaker, the representative from District 24 will explain the Senate amendment.
This is a real tough one, Madam Speaker.
Representative Cott.
On page 1 of the Senate version, they have added the two words on line 8, in writing. The effect of this is that before a person could be denied workers' compensation benefits for making a false statement concerning an existing physical condition, the statement must be made in writing. The division workers' comp, they are completely supportive of the measure, and I would ask your support.
Further debate? Motion before the body is to concur in the Senate amendments. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just a little ahead of you.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I certainly would then move that the House concur with the Senate amendment in HB 214, thus adopting HB 214, amended Senate, and recommend that the members vote yes.
Debate. Ready for the question? And the question being, shall the House concur in the Senate amendments on House Bill 214? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
39 yeas, 0 nays.
And so the House has concurred in the Senate amendments, thus adopting House Bill 214, amended Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent the roll call vote on the concurrence of HB 214, amended Senate, be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Further unfinished business? Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have two bills I need to ask to have waived from the Finance Committee. First is Senate Bill 100. It deals with grants for developmentally disabled children. I have a memo with all the members signing, agreeing to waive the bill from committee. It has a zero fiscal note and has been heard in the House HES Committee.
What number was that, Representative Terry?
Senate Bill 100.
100?
Moving on, asking unanimous consent.
Without objection? Senate Bill 100 is waived. Representative Tifterio.
Next, I would ask that the body allow me to waive House Bill 241, payment of costs at Alaska Pioneer Homes. Again, I have a memo with all the committee members signing. It has a zero fiscal note and was heard in the House CNRA Committee.
Without objection, House Bill 241 will be waived from Finance. Further unfinished business, Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I've had a request to waive HCR 6, Alcohol-Related Birth Defects Awareness Resolution from the HES Committee. I have conferred with all committee members, and they are in agreement with the waiver.
Without objection, House Concurrent Resolution Number 6 will be waived from Hess. Further unfinished business? House stand at ease. Further unfinished business? Announcements? Representative Foster.
Yes, ma'am. We've got a birthday today on behalf of the Majority Leader, the last birthday of all the members of this body. And it's House District 27, Representative Scott Ogan. He's a Tarsus. And I just went through his biography. I skipped all the other stuff here to save a little time. But you know, Madam Speaker, he was born, our good friend was born, on May 3rd, 1952, in Columbus, Ohio. And it states here that since then he's been very good to his mother. He never goes home. His education was at Seacrest High in Delray Beach, Florida in 1970, and it states here that his mom and dad were real proud of him when he graduated, and so were his wife and kids. His first job, Scott's first job, was with the Campbell Soup Company. He was a proofreader for their alphabet soup. And it's time.